From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Joining me on the program is VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Selden. Our special guest on this edition of the program is Ali Soufan. He's former supervisory FBI agent, currently CEO of the Soufan Group. He's also the author of the forthcoming book, Anatomy of Terror. The Soufan Group is a strategic intelligence consultancy based in New York City. In his previous position as FBI Supervisory Special Agent, Ali Soufan investigated and oversaw sensitive and complex international terrorism cases, including the East Africa embassy bombings, the attack on the USS Cole, and events surrounding the 9/11 terrorist attacks on U.S. soil. As a top national security and counterterrorism expert, Ali continues to play a significant advisory role on today's most sensitive issues. We'll talk with Ali Soufan about U.S. President Donald Trump's allegations of wiretapping by former President Obama, the national security implications of one of the largest leaks of CIA documents by WikiLeaks, ongoing FBI and congressional investigations into the Trump administration's links to Russia during and after the campaign, and the revised executive order entitled Protecting the Nation from Foreign Terrorist Entry into the United States, which temporarily bans travel from 6 Muslim-majority countries, and many more topics. And Ali is no stranger to the Voice of America. We've been privileged to talk with him on the sidelines of the annual UN General Assembly for the past several years. And Ali now joins us by phone from his office in New York City. Ali Soufan, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me again.
And delighted to welcome my colleague Jeff Selden.
My pleasure.
Well, Ali Soufan, let's first start now with President Trump's revised executive order. After the first travel ban was challenged in the courts, we now have a new one. This one drops Iraq from the list of banned countries and no longer bars permanent lawful residents and those possessing a valid visa as of late January 2017. Now, some have argued that this order will not necessarily achieve its objectives, that it's a sort of watered-down variation of the first one. I'd like to get your view of this travel order and to what extent you think it will or will not achieve its objectives.
Well, the revised executive order is basically the same order that was issued by the president. Let's call it the executive order light, the travel ban light. It focuses on nationalities, as you correctly mentioned, and dropped Iraq out of the list. However, as we know from a recent Department of Homeland Security intelligence assessment, citizenship is a very poor indicator of terrorist intent. You cannot just say that everyone from any specific country or specific nation is possibly a terrorist. I think what we need to do, instead of banning people based on nationality, we need to have an executive order that have operational and have practical backing. Let's look at the threat matrix today. We have about 40,000 foreign fighters from more than 92 different countries that joined the Iraq and Syria civil war. At least 5,000 to 6,000 of them come from Western European countries or from countries that's covered by the visa waiver program. So let's look at the threat matrix and let's try to enhance the vetting orders that we have and close the existing gaps in the system rather than trying to fix a problem that is already fixed. You know, since 9/11 until today, to include 9/11, you don't have a major plot or major terrorist attack that came from any of these 7 countries. And this is not a coincidence. There's a reason for that, because under the Clinton administration and under President Bush and under President Obama, we always looked into vetting process from countries that experience trouble, and we already have a robust vetting system in place that have been preventing people from coming to the United States who have bad intention. So today, if you look at ISIS, if you look at Al-Qaeda, they attempt to use the their ideology, their narrative, broadcasted through the internet and trying to radicalize people inside the United States. This is the biggest threat that we have. And that ideology, that cancerous ideology that's coming over from areas that Al-Qaeda and ISIS control to the United States, does not need visa, does not need extreme vetting. This is what we need to focus on. How do we combat this ideology? And another thing, in order to keep America safe, we have to focus on the increase in white supremacy activities in the United States and also in Europe. If we don't focus our efforts in detecting and preventing all sort of extremism, the Islamic type or the white supremacist type, we're going to have communities that feel that they are under attack by their own government, which is going to make it way easier for a group like ISIS and Al-Qaeda to recruit. So we have to be very careful on what kind of strategy we'll put forth in place to make America safe.
Well, thank you, Ali. Now I'd like to turn to my colleague, Jeff Seldon, for a question.
I just wanted to follow up. You were talking so much about how there's not terrorist threats coming from these other countries. What about the concern about some of those people being vulnerable? And you touched on it a little bit, but there have been attacks in the U.S. by people who are either children of or have come from other countries, but they weren't radicals when they came in. Is part of counteracting the message and needing to look at which communities these guys are targeting? And given how much degraded the Islamic State terror organization has become, how good are these guys still at reaching in to communities, whether it's in Europe or in the U.S., and finding those who are receptive, who are vulnerable to the message?
That's a very good question, but I think we have to separate Europe from the U.S. because the dynamics in Europe is very different than the dynamics in the U.S. If you look at the Muslim community in America, it is the richest Muslim community in the world. It's the most diverse Muslim community in the world. It's the most educated Muslim community in the world. It is the second most educated after the Jewish community in the United States. And it is, from all the statistics and data that have been done, it is very much assimilated in America. So when you have people who are children or second generation committing crimes or terrorism in the United States, we have to keep in mind that those people have been radicalized here, have been radicalized with the thing that I just mentioned before we need to focus on, which is the poisonous narrative coming from overseas. But also at the same time, we have individuals who are not second generation, who were converts. Even we have people who were arrested, who were born in the United States, live in the United States. Their great grandparents used to be in the United States. We have terrorists even from 9/11 until now who were American as apple pie. You know, John Walker Lynn, Jose Padilla, and you can go down the list. The spokesperson and the head of media of Al Qaeda, Adam Gadan, a Jewish kid from California who converted to Islam. So I think we have to focus on the ideology rather than focus on nationality. And also, we cannot look into places like Molenbeek in Belgium or Saint-Denis in France and say, hey, you know, this is how it is in the United States, because I think it's comparing apples and oranges.
Ali Soufan, I wanted to move on to another topic, and that is the wiretapping allegations by President Trump. He has accused former President Barack Obama of tapping his phones at Trump Tower the month before the election, a claim that FBI Director James Comey urged the Justice Department to publicly reject. Just quickly, your reaction to these allegations.
I think this is outrageous allegation. The President of the United States cannot order a wiretap. Only a judge can order a wiretap. And I think this is a very sad day in American history when one president accusing another president of tapping his phone. This is something like a banana republic stuff. Really sad, and I don't believe it's true in any way, shape, or form.
Moving on now to WikiLeaks. They released a massive trove of documents and files last week that expose how the CIA hacked smartphones, computer operating systems, etc. An analyst at CSIS said that foreign state, most likely Russia, stole the documents by hacking or other means and maybe delivered them to WikiLeaks. First of all, your reaction to this breach, and then we could get you to comment on if you see any possible connections between Mr. Trump's allegations that Mr. Obama tapped his phones and then this breach of the CIA.
I think the timing of the release of these alleged WikiLeaks cables, The timing is a really interesting timing that it came, you know, almost immediately after President Trump's allegation. So if I'm investigating this, that will be definitely a big piece of the puzzle. WikiLeaks has been proving itself to be a tool in the hands of Russian intelligence. And that's not me only saying that. That's the assessment also of the intelligence community in the report that they put out about the Russian interference in our election, that WikiLeaks was used by the Russian intelligence as an outlet for their activities, so that they have a denial platform. That was the assessment of the intelligence community. I don't know what's really shocking about these WikiLeaks revelations. You know, I mean, they are telling us that an intelligence agency is actually spying, or a spying agency is basically involved in spying activities. Well, that's shocking. Let's see if WikiLeaks will put something out and reveal how a Russian intelligence assassinate people using WMD and poison around the world. Let's see if they put stuff out about how Russia interfered in our election. Let's see if they put some revelations about Russians' activities in Syria or in the Ukraine. It seems that WikiLeaks only have amazing capabilities to do cyber theft in the United States, but they don't have the ability to do any cyber theft in Russia or in any other places. It seems only liberal democracies are being targeted by WikiLeaks.
Well, that's a very good point. We'll be back in just a moment, but first, you're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our special guest is Ali Soufan. He's author of the forthcoming book, The Anatomy of Terror. He's also CEO of the Soufan Group, a strategic intelligence consultancy based in New York City. I'm Carol Castiel, and joining me on the program is VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Selden. This is a reminder that our Press Conference USA podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. And here's a shout out to Ezechi Nkwoma. He's a loyal listener from Lagos, Nigeria. Thanks, Ezechi, for your recent email. We want to hear from you. What insights have you gleaned from our conversation with Ali Soufan? Write to us at PCUSA@voanews.com. Tell us your name, where you're from, and how you listen to the program. Or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. And now let me turn to Jeff Selden for a follow-up question.
We were talking just a moment ago about the WikiLeaks revelation about the CIA's cyber spying capabilities and its cyber spying program, which leads to two different sets of questions. One, about the security of some of these programs, whether it's CIA or NSA, going back to the Snowden betrayal, as people in the intelligence community talk about it, where he released a whole bunch of information through WikiLeaks and ended up taking refuge in Russia. But also, there have been some high-profile disclosures since then. So how secure are some of these programs? Or is this just the new reality of the cyber game, given how it's carried out, how every country needs to operate? It also gets to what Russia's larger game plan seems to be, both for the United States and for Europe, where we've heard numerous countries saying that they're expecting in their elections something similar to what Russia pulled, or they think Russia pulled, in the U.S.
Very good question again. I mean, look, you know, we're looking into two things. We're looking into a state actor committing cyber warfare. And when a state like Russia is putting all their capabilities in something like this, they are able to get some information. And from that information, they pick what they want to release, and they are releasing it through WikiLeaks. At least this is an assessment of the intelligence community. But also at the same time, you have to keep in mind that there is insider threat. Most of the intelligence releases that we had, Snowden, Bradley, basically were insider threats. People who had access to the system downloaded stuff and sent them to another country or another entity or WikiLeaks itself. But I agree with the second portion of your question. Basically, look, the U.S. has many critical national security issues today. We have North Korea, we have China, we have terrorism. But this allegation of them interfering in our politics and interfering in the politics of our allies is the most serious national security issue we are facing today. This is a major escalation in Russia's effort to undermine the U.S.-led liberal democracy's order, the world order that existed since World War II. And that's why I believe we need to take this issue seriously, and we need to establish a full and independent investigation to get to the bottom of this. We will be doing ourselves a great harm by publicly discussing or promoting evidence-free allegation. This leads to promotion of the culture of conspiratorial or conspiracy theories that put us here in the first place. So I think the best thing we can do is try to have an independent investigation into this and put it to rest.
Well, you said independent investigation, Ali Soufan, so I just want to piggyback on that. As you know, vis-a-vis ties between Mr. Trump and Russia, the FBI and several congressional committees are now investigating possible links between the Trump campaign and Russia, especially after the resignation of former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, who had lied about contacts and the substance of conversations he had with the Russian ambassador to the United States after the election, but before the inauguration. So based on the evidence so far and the fact that Mr. Trump is often very complimentary to Vladimir Putin, are you indeed concerned about the potential connections between former Trump campaign officials and maybe some in the administration and Vladimir Putin? And are you confident that the Congress and FBI can get to the bottom of the issue of possible collusion? Or would you like to see another more independent investigation go forward?
I would like to see an independent investigation. I'm sure that the FBI will be involved with the investigation anyway, but I really don't believe that that's something to be discussed in Congress. If you look at the chairman of the Intelligence Committee in the House and in the Senate, both of them were used by not only the Trump campaign, by the Trump administration to downplay any kind of Russian interference in our election. And that is very concerning. How can they lead an investigation if basically what the White House did had them try to kill the story? So, look, you know, I don't know what's going on. Seriously, I'm not even concerned that there are officials of any incoming administration meeting with Russian officials or officials from any other country. But I am very concerned when they lie about it. Why are you lying about it? Why are you trying to hide it? You mentioned Flynn, you know, but also I would like to mention Attorney General Sessions. I mean, I'm not saying that he lied. This is not up to me to judge. And I think recusing himself was a very good start. But people seem to forget a lot when it comes to meeting with the Russians. And that creates some concerns. And I think the best way for the sake of our democracy, for the sake of our faith in our own democratic process, I think we need to have an independent investigation to put this to rest. You know, every day this story go on, Putin is winning. You know, he already succeeded in promoting a sense of paranoia in our political culture. So regardless of the truth, you and I now, we're talking about Russia and we're talking about Putin. For him, that's a win. Mm-hmm. We cannot afford this story to go any longer. If there is anything, people need to be held accountable. If there is nothing, we need to say there's nothing and move on.
I want to squeeze in one quick question before I turn to my colleague, Jeff Seldon, Ali Soufan. And we've heard President Trump criticize the intelligence community, the FBI, and other institutions of state, career bureaucrats. We have now called this community, we're hearing the term deep state for these institutions. And as we've said in this conversation, we hear Mr. Trump actually being rather complimentary towards Russia. As a former member of the intelligence community, FBI supervisory agent, how do you see these types of criticisms and attitudes by Mr. Trump vis-a-vis the intelligence community? Very critical of them when, in fact, they're theoretically, and I believe we can have full confidence, there to protect national security.
I don't believe we have something in the United States called the deep state. This is just a silly notion. Unfortunately, around the president, we have people who believe in conspiracy theories, and they are promoting these ideas. I think in the United States, we have a lot of law-abiding bureaucrats who take their job of securing our nation very seriously, and they serve the flag of the United States and the Constitution of the United States, regardless to who the president is. So I think we need to basically protect our reputation around the world And protecting our reputation around the world cannot be by saying that we have a deep state in America. We're not Egypt. We're not Turkey. We're the United States of America. This is very concerning, and it is very concerning when these type of allegations come from the commander-in-chief, from the president of the United States. I think, you know, again, Russia is winning, Putin is winning, Iran is winning. All the enemies of the United States, when they hear this kind of language, they're going to tell their people, and they're already telling their people, didn't we tell you so? That's what America is all about. I think, look, President Trump might be able to clear the air and end the claims that he's tied to Russia by ordering an independent investigation and also by releasing his tax return. So long as he refuses, this shadow will continue to hang over his administration.
Indeed, we've had many calls for him to do that. That would certainly clarify things. Now let me turn to Jeff Selden for another question.
We've been talking about the mistrust or the uneasy relationship between President Trump and the intelligence community, but one part of the U.S. bureaucracy in which he seems to have a lot of trust is in the military and in his generals, as he likes to call them. Secretary of Defense Mattis, the new Secretary of Homeland Security, former general, retired general John Kelly. And he talks a lot about being strong again, making America great again, winning again in places like Iraq and Syria. And he talked about having this plan to defeat ISIS. From what you've seen so far, what's your reaction to the approach that the administration seems to be taking on destroying ISIS as a proto-state, as a caliphate, but also on what about making sure it doesn't return? The ongoing fear from people in the region is, yeah, you can crush the Islamic State armies or fighters right now, but then what? What about the terrorism? What about the other parts of the plan that need to be in place?
Well, first of all, since he took office, we don't see any changes in the battle against ISIS. So far, the battle against ISIS has been carried out by the Iraqis, the same Iraqis who were insulted by being included in the first travel ban to come to the United States. ISIS lost a significant amount of territories, I think probably about 65% of the territories that they controlled at their peak are basically now controlled either by different Syrian rebels or the Syrian government or the Iraqi government. And that is very significant. So the plan in targeting ISIS, the coalition plan, is still the same plan that was put forth under the former administration, and it continues to unfold. I know the president said that he has a secretive plan that will get rid of ISIS in 30 days. I think we are now maybe day 50, and we still did not see the secret plan. Having said that, I have full trust in General Kelly at DHS. I have full trust in General Mattis, and I have full trust in General McMaster, who is an amazing national security expert, and I read a lot of his work, and I heard some of his speeches and his comments, and he definitely knows exactly what was going on in the world. He knows what Russia is doing. He knows what China is trying to do, North Korea, and how to effectively develop a comprehensive plan to beat terrorism and to beat the Islamic State. Unfortunately, we have to see and wait who's going to be in charge in developing that in the National Security Council. Is it going to be the generals, or is it going to be, for example, Mr. Steve Bannon and the people that he brought in and their strategic initiative that they are trying to create within the National Security Council? I mean, these are things we need to focus on, and they will probably give us an idea of how the future is going to be, not only in the war against ISIS, but also in our relationships with our European allies in Germany, in Holland, in France, in England, and also on how we deal with Russia's interference. And as you know, there are so many different reports, especially by European intelligence, that Russia is actively supporting and promoting directly and indirectly the ultra-right movement in liberal democracies around the continent in Europe. So these are very serious issues, and I think we need to focus on them because they're going to give us an indication of how the future is going to be.
Very quickly, one last follow-up on Islamic State. How concerned are you about Islamic State's external operations capabilities even after the caliphate is defeated, even after they lose Mosul and Raqqa?
Look, you know, the Islamic State already, you know, went through a full cycle. They started as a terrorist organization, and then they became insurgency, and then they became a proto-state. And with all their bravado, they are going back to an underground terrorist organization. I am concerned about their external capabilities because of the amount of foreign fighters that they had from so many different countries around the world. Those people now not only, you know, are brainwashed with the narrative of ISIS, but also at the same time they have a lot of capabilities and training to conduct terrorist attacks. Just a few of them created havoc in Belgium and in France, for example. So I'm concerned about that. The defeat of the Islamic State, the defeat of the caliphate does not mean the end of terrorism. And I'm also more concerned about the organization that the Islamic State came out of, which is Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda today have way more support, fighters, money, equipment, areas that they control than they ever dreamed of. On the eve of 9/11, Bin Laden had only 400 members of Al-Qaeda. Al-Nusra alone in Syria is more than 7,000. AQIP in Yemen is more than 5,000 to 6,000. So, you know, the Arab Spring, the vacuums that existed in places like Libya, in places like Yemen, in places like Syria, is working very well for Al-Qaeda, who's thinking in the long strategy and focusing on developing its capabilities. So, yes, ISIS is a really kind of like a sexy thing to watch in the media, but I think a lot of things happening under the radar with Al-Qaeda that should be also very concerning to us.
As we close, Ali Soufan, in the few minutes we have left, speaking of under the radar, I'd like you to address very briefly the unique threat of the Islamic State in Afghanistan, the subject of one of your recent intel briefs. You said that despite more than 15 years of a combat presence and billions spent on creating a central government, the spread of the so-called Islamic State to Afghanistan shows how fragile the country remains. Discuss the threat of the Islamic State in Afghanistan briefly before we close.
Well, you know, the Taliban has been an insurgency. The Islamic State are coming to Afghanistan as a terrorist organization, and they are trying to copy what they did in Iraq and what they did in other places in Afghanistan itself. And the strategy that we have, the counterinsurgency strategy that might work against the Taliban, will be very, very difficult to work against ISIS. This is just another reminder of our longest war. This is just another reminder that we have an ongoing war that has been taking place since 2001. And guess what? We always put more and more on the plate of our military to handle this. The military can do the job of taking a country, can do a job in providing security in some areas in order to promote, you know, a peaceful transition of power. But it's up to the diplomats to do the peaceful transition of power, to do the kind of framework that we have to adapt in moving forward. And unfortunately, we put a lot on the plate of our military where we don't use other tools in the box like economic assistance, like diplomacy, like political solutions. Those are always on the shelf. And I think our military, they do a phenomenal job, but they need the political support and the diplomatic support, and they need the regional and international initiatives that's done by people in State Department and in the White House in order to provide more permanent solution. This is the longest war. It cost billions and billions of dollars, and unfortunately, we don't see any real development since 2001.
Indeed, and as you said in your report, that the Islamic State represents a new and distinct form of a parasite that feeds off the weakness wrought by strife and, of course, poor governance, which can't be combated with the military. I'm afraid that's all the time we have for Press Conference USA. Ali Soufan is a former FBI supervisory special agent. He's currently CEO of the Soufan Group and author of the forthcoming book, The Anatomy of Terror. And when is that going to be out, Ali?
May 2nd.
And we look forward to interviewing you about the book soon after that.
It will be my pleasure.
Thanks, as always, for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guest. Our engineer was Thomas Blondet. And joining me on the program was Jeff Selden. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.